Welcome to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people stories and events in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this Independence Holiday edition of Local Talk. I hope you're having a pleasant weekend. During the first part of the hour, we will, of course, have a roundup of the news from Mr. Dennis Hart, and then we'll spend some time on the experience of being an American from two perspectives. Ames native Cynthia Gaunt will talk about her family, which dates back to colonial America. Licida Membreño just arrived in the United States 2 weeks ago. She tells a different American story about being an immigrant seeking asylum in this country. In the last part of the show, Maddie Tate-Smith, public affairs coordinator for the Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault, sees Bill Cosby's recent release from his sexual assault conviction as a teachable moment, and he offers some profound insights as well as information about help. It's going to be a thoughtful and heartfelt program, I think, and I hope you stay with us. I should warn you that the conversations both with Maddie and Licida do include the topic of violence and sexual abuse, should you prefer to turn away for your own personal reasons. Okay, let's do the weather and then the news. This week is going to see sunshine and rain. Sunny today. Clouds will slowly come in on Tuesday with rain predicted for Wednesday. Thursday again, a little bit of sunshine, and then Friday, rain and thunderstorms. And then Saturday, Sunday, looks like the sun will partially be coming out. Temperatures are kind of all over the place. Today we're in the 90s. Tomorrow we're in the 90s. And then Wednesday the high drops down to 79 and then slowly starts to climb back up to 91 on Friday. But over the weekend it should stay in the 80s. So it'll be interesting to see if we're going to have a comfortable weekend. Okay, here's Mr. Dennis Hart with the news.
A tragic accident after the Slater Independence Day Parade. A state Supreme Court victory for former Iowa Governor Terry Branstad in one case, and a state Supreme Court loss for Planned Parenthood in another, all made big news around Iowa last week. First, the accident in Slater. One person died this past Saturday, and three others were injured just after the annual Independence Day parade there. A vehicle struck pedestrians at the corner of Main and Tama Streets. Authorities said a 75-year-old woman backed up a car and struck multiple people. Four of them were dragged underneath the car. A Minnesota woman died, and three other people were injured, including a 6-year-old child. The crash took place just a few blocks east of the parade route, about 12 minutes after the parade had ended. Also this holiday weekend, four people were hospitalized after an accident at the Raging River Ride at Adventureland in Altoona. They were on a raft that overturned Saturday night. That ride had been inspected on Friday and was found to be in sound working order. Now for the Iowa Supreme Court. It ruled last week that former Workers' Compensation Commissioner Christopher Godfrey had no claims against former Governor Terry Branstad or his administration. That decision ended a longtime discrimination lawsuit and overturned a $1.5 million jury verdict in Godfrey's favor. The court held that Godfrey, who is gay, did not present any evidence that Branstad knew that fact when he tried to force Godfrey out of office. In another case, the state Supreme Court ruled that Iowa lawmakers can prohibit Planned Parenthood from teaching government-funded sex education to students. The court ruled that lawmakers may prohibit Planned Parenthood from applying for grant programs for sex education, even if the curriculum does not include abortion as a viable option. Planned Parenthood called the ruling disappointing. Now, for those new state laws that went into effect on July 1st. Among them, a new law letting adults 21 and over buy handguns and carry them in most public places without getting a permit. A new Des Moines Register Mediacom Iowa poll showed that a majority of Iowans oppose that new law. The poll found that 2/3 of Iowans oppose the new law, while 1/3 favor it. This, as word came that gun deaths have been surging in Iowa. A record 353 people died from gunshot wounds in the state last year. Another new law bans mandatory diversity training that teaches certain concepts related to racism and sexism. It now cannot be taught that the U.S. or Iowa are systemically racist or sexist. And another new Register poll showed that more than half the state's residents oppose that law. Governor Reynolds supports it, saying she wants to prevent discriminatory indoctrination in classrooms. Opponents say it will chill needed discussion about racial inequities in schools, colleges, and governmental agencies. Another new law means groups trying to form charter schools can apply directly to the state of Iowa. Charter schools are publicly funded institutions that can follow separate curriculum or structure from traditional schools. And yes, there was another Register poll on that this week. 55% of Iowans oppose the new law, 33% favor it. Yet another new law widely expands the number of families who can teach their children driver education. and several new laws affecting child care went into effect, as did a new law aimed at stopping activists from targeting farming operations. On the coronavirus front last week, word that after reaching its lowest point in nearly 15 months, the number of people in Iowa hospitalized with the virus started going back up, and so did the number of deaths. By this weekend, 6,146 people had died from the coronavirus in Iowa since the pandemic began last year, and around 405,000 had been confirmed to have the virus. And word came over the weekend that the so-called Delta variant of the virus was gaining strength in Iowa. Over the past 2 weeks, that variant has caused more than half the positive coronavirus tests in the state. That spike in cases is mostly among unvaccinated people. Also last week, word that the coronavirus had struck nearly every nursing home in Iowa in the past year. The virus struck 92% of the state's 431 nursing homes. And the coronavirus killed a dozen or more elderly people in each of 57 of those homes. An official with the Iowa Healthcare Association told the Des Moines Register that managing the coronavirus in nursing homes was, in his words, like having a house next to a forest fire and trying to keep the smoke out. In other news last week, word that Iowans who had been forced out of work after being sickened by the coronavirus continued to be denied jobless benefits by the state, while those who voluntarily quit their jobs due to the risk of contracting the virus are collecting benefits. Under state law, workers can often collect jobless benefits after quitting a job due to intolerable or unsafe working conditions, but they often are deemed ineligible for benefits if illness or other factors leave them unable to work. But in another job-related story, Iowa Workforce Development announced last week that state compensation for newly unemployed Iowans would be increasing. The state is resetting the benefits because the average wage in Iowa went up from 2019 to 2020. As a result, the maximum weekly jobless benefit in Iowa will increase from $605 to $651. Meanwhile, last week, Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley said he was disappointed when the U.S. Supreme Court declined to review California's ban on the sale of meat from animals that do not meet that state's space standards for confinements. Iowa is the nation's top pork producer, and industry officials say sales would go up if California would loosen its minimum required space for breeding pigs in confinement. In Des Moines last week, one protester was arrested at the city council meeting. This after city officials had announced they would enforce a part of the city code that outlines rules that residents attending public meetings must obey. A protest broke out after the council voted to end its practice of hearing oral requests to remove items from its consent agenda. The council then decided against removing an item involving a contract to train city police officers in de-escalation tactics. Also last week, state investigators alleged that a former Des Moines Public Schools horticulture teacher improperly spent nearly $20,000, including paying his wife more than $18,000. Craig Nelson, who was responsible for the school's central campus greenhouse, had worked for the district since 2017. The Des Moines School Board fired him this year. Also last week, word from the Des Moines-based financial services company Principal, which announced it would stop selling fixed annuities, term life, and universal life insurance products to retail customers. The company said it would continue selling the life insurance products to businesses. This after the activist investor Elliott Management Group had called for a review of all of Principal's lines of businesses. Principal said it wants to sell the management of about $25 billion worth of plans to another life insurance provider. There was also word that RagBri, the Register's annual great bicycle ride across Iowa, is having trouble finding volunteers in its pass-through and overnight towns. The ride is set to take place July 25th through the 31st. Organizers say the volunteer issue might be because life is just starting to return to normal after the coronavirus disrupted things last year, and people just want to enjoy events rather than work at them. There was also word last week about the Iowa Lottery. It has surpassed $400 million a year in sales for the first time. Lottery officials said the surge appears to be related to the coronavirus pandemic. Many lottery players seemed to buy tickets as at-home entertainment. There was also an interesting poll in the Des Moines Register this past Saturday. It showed that more than a quarter of all state residents are thinking about leaving the Hawkeye State. 13% say they're seriously considering moving out, and another 14% have at least thought about it. Maybe fireworks will keep them here. The Register also reported that fireworks sales were booming around the state and the nation. The Register also reported that injuries caused by the fireworks were also exploding, more than doubling in Iowa since a 2017 law that legalized their sale and use by consumers. And also up this 4th of July, the price of gasoline. In parts of the Des Moines Metro, the price of unleaded was near $3 a gallon. Also last week, word that the State Department of Transportation is moving its interstate message program to Fridays in hopes of reaching more people on one of the busiest and deadliest driving days of the week. You've seen those messages on interstate message boards, jokes highlighting highway safety tips, and listing the year-to-date roadway fatality count for Iowa. Among those messages, get your heads out of your apps, exit to text it, and texting and driving, oh, sell no. And the Register had a piece on words that only Iowans could pronounce. Among them, the cities and towns of Madrid, Edel, Nevada, Gutenberg, Tripola, Houghton, Ionia, Maquoketa, and Chillicothe, the county of Buena Vista, and the actor by the name of Ashton Kutcher. And one more note from last week, and this one has to do with a TV weatherman. Curtis Gertz retired from KCCI-TV in Des Moines last Thursday. He first joined Channel 8 back in 1994, went to Salt Lake City for a few years, then returned to KCCI for good in 2000. He became the station's chief meteorologist 5 years ago. He is 60 years old, and he says he wants to spend more time with his wife and son and daughter. Curtis Gertz has been the gold standard when it comes to TV weather people. During all those days or nights when storms have turned threatening around these parts, he's been right there on Channel 8, often for hours at a time, tracking everything. There were more than a few tears on the KCCI-TV news set last Thursday night when Curtis said his final goodbye. And I bet there were a few tears in some Iowa households as well. I know there were in mine. Happy retirement, Curtis. And that is your summary of the week's news from all around the state. I'm Dennis Hart, hoping you had a great 4th of July and planning to come right back here to Local Talk this coming Friday morning at 7, when I'll have word on what's been making news in Ames. In the meantime, have a great week.
Revolution, written by John Lennon and performed by Bill Frisell. And I'm dedicating that song to my next guest, Cynthia Gaunt. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host. Thank you for listening on this Independence holiday. In this next half hour, stories about being American through the eyes of two individuals coming from two very different perspectives and experiences. In about 15 minutes, we'll hear from Licida Membreño. She just arrived in Ames 2 weeks ago. But first, let's start at another end of the spectrum. Cynthia Gaunt grew up in Ames and has lived here most of her life. I asked her to speak as a more than sixth-generation American. And since she's a member of the DAR, Daughters of the American Revolution, I asked her to start out by describing the DAR. So, Cynthia, the floor is yours.
Hi, I'm Cynthia, and I'm going to talk to you about the local Ames Sundial chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution. I have a certificate that says I joined in June 1974.
Okay, so it says Cynthia Jane Quinn, which was your maiden name, is a regularly approved member of the National Society of the Daughters of the American Revolution, having been admitted by the National Board of Management by virtue of her descent from a patriot who, with unfailing loyalty, rendered material aid to the cause of American independence during the Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm.
That's very auspicious. So tell us, what is the DAR?
It's a society that was founded in October 1890. That's the National Society for Historic, Educational, and Patriotic Service. They have meetings once a month to promote patriotism, and they have programs on history and genealogy.
It started on the East Coast?
Yes, District of Columbia. That's where it was founded.
So the website for the Daughters of the American Revolution, DAR.org, states that the Daughters of the American Revolution was founded by four determined women, decidedly not ladies of leisure. These four founders were anything but traditional. It talks a little bit about why the DAR was created. The Sons of the American Revolution had recently been founded in New York City, and in 1890, the Sons of American Revolution decided to officially exclude membership from women. So this event sparked controversy and discussion in the national press and caught the attention of Mary Smith Lockwood. Incensed that the contributions of women to the American Revolution were not being recognized, Mrs. Lockwood wrote a fiery editorial that was published in the Washington Post. She asked, "Were there no mothers of the revolution?" And she demonstrated convincingly that women had contributed much to the revolutionary cause and had been overlooked and ignored. Mary Lockwood was a resident of Washington, D.C., and her imposing house, the Strathmore Arms, was the location of the first meeting for the DAR. She was a historian and author and avid promoter for women's clubs. For a time, she was president of the Women's Press Club. 18 women attended the first official meeting in October 11th at the home of Miss Lockwood, and these include the four women traditionally considered to be the organization's founders: Miss Lockwood, Miss Deesha, Miss Eugenia Washington, and Mrs. Ellen Hardin. So that's just a little bit about the beginning of the Daughters of American Revolution, an effort to acknowledge the contribution that women made to the founding of the independent country. Just a reminder, this is Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm speaking with Cynthia Gaunt, longtime resident of Ames and member of the Daughters of the American Revolution. I've been asking Cynthia to tell us a little bit about the Daughters of the American Revolution.
When you join the DAR, you need to prove that you have a ancestor who fought in the Revolution.
Uh-huh.
And my ancestor was James Bell. Born in Ireland, about 1750.
He was Irish.
This is information from some family member, A.F. Bell, who is a great-grandson of James Bell. And James lived in Philadelphia. And he enlisted in the army in Philadelphia in 1777. And that made him 27. He was a member of the artillery. He carried a sword as his only weapon. Says he was under the command of Colonel John Eyre, which also sounds Irish, and he was also lieutenant in the army, serving with General Washington at Valley Forge.
Oh. Do you know if he survived the war?
It says he lived a long life of 75 years, so died on December 24th, 1825.
He died on Christmas.
Yep.
So do you know which generation you are?
Six.
So you go back six generations to the Revolutionary War. It
seems
like they kept track of who fought in the war?
Yes. I know my husband had another ancestor who also fought in the Revolution. And so somebody on his side of the family joined the DAR as well. I assume my ancestor, James Bell, was a farmer because we have a long line of farmers in our family. And my grandpa farmed in Indiana. That's where my mother grew up.
You grew up in Ames, right?
Yeah, I was born here. They moved here so my dad could work at Iowa State.
Is there a family story about Indiana?
Yes, Sunny Slope Farm in Indiana. It was a special place that we visited every Christmas and during the summer. And it was kind of a family tradition for a while that we'd go visit both sets of grandparents.
Was it nice?
Yeah, it was great. I had a preserve and horses. My sister and I rode. And They'd either play in the barn or go down to the creek, and there was all kinds of things to do down there.
So you're really a family of people from Indiana.
Yeah, essentially. But I've been in Ames for so long.
You're really an Ames girl.
Yeah.
Did you live downtown or in Campus Town?
It was Campus Town. My dad would walk to work in the science building, and I loved the house that I grew up in because it was a big backyard. We had a mulberry tree with a wooden treehouse and lots of flowers, and there was a little apple orchard down the street where Chamberlain is. I got to walk to school every day, and my brother had a paper route, and sometimes I'd help him out. It was kind of a happy childhood in that sense.
At what point did it occur to you to look into joining the DAR?
Actually, it was my mother's influence, so... She was a regent for a couple of years and essentially the president of the Ames Sundial chapter. And right now it's Susan Harris. My mother put the papers in, sent them in to the Washington, D.C. office. There's a handbook that has all the names of the members in there and who their ancestor was, that, and some other information that explains the principles of the DAR and what they stand for.
How would you describe the principles? What is the purpose?
When I think of DAR, I say it's just very patriotic and historic and promoting fellowship as well. DAR set up plaques in some of the historic areas in Ames. The site of the first house in Ames on the corner of 5th Street and Douglas. And then the site of the first house in West Ames on the southeast corner of Lincoln Way and Sheldon.
What does it mean to you to be in the DAR?
Tracing your family history, for me, is very important, and finding out what people did and how they served the country. In the cemetery, I have my husband and his father, and then my father all served in the military. So I have flags from all three members of the family.
Would you say that you're patriotic?
To some degree, yes. I do believe in the flag, displaying it properly.
Partly it was a connection with people.
Right. For me it was. They had what they used to call a DAR tea. I think they changed it to DAR coffee now. And that's kind of a social event. I think a lot of the people may not be around anymore and they're passing away. And so the Ames chapter decided to merge with the Nevada chapter, which is called the Solomon Dean chapter. That one was organized in 1922. There's chapters, maybe not in every county, but there's two chapters in Des Moines.
It's kind of surprising that there's enough people here in central Iowa to create chapters who actually date back to the Revolutionary War. It seems like we're a long ways away from that geographically.
We are.
It makes you think that in those days, there weren't that many people.
Yeah. I'm interested in genealogy, and I belong to the Story County Genealogy Society now. Mm-hmm. And I also joined the Ancestry.com. I can trace people to Ireland, England, Germany, Holland, Scots-Irish. My dad said there was somebody from Wales.
Did his family come over at the time of the Revolution as well?
Some of them may have come even before that.
Yeah, so you're kind of the embodying of the people that came west.
Yeah.
As a member of the DAR, what would your 4th of July message be?
Be sure to attend wonderful concerts that the Ames Municipal Band puts on. That's one thing I would not miss for the world, is just being there and hearing all the patriotic songs. And the one where you hear the piccolo and you get to stand up on the last verse. And it just gives me shivers every time I hear that. And I would say be sure to just recognize and respect your country when you see a flag, to honor it. Stand up when they're saying the Pledge of Allegiance and join respect, which I think is important.
I'm going to be interviewing Lucida Membreño, who is a new immigrant to this country. She's a potential American who has just arrived about 2 weeks ago. As a DAR member and a longstanding member of the Ames community, what would you say to her?
Welcome to the United States. Things aren't always perfect, but learn what it's like to live in the United States and to use your voting capabilities and just enjoy what it's like to live here.
Thank you, Cynthia.
You're welcome. It's fun.
This is Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for the hour. Hoping you're having a pleasant weekend. We just heard from Cynthia Gaunt, whose voice embodies a long family tradition connected to colonial Americans and then the early farmers of the Midwest. Lisida Membreño offers a dramatically contrasting story. She arrived in Ames 2 weeks ago together with her son to begin a whole new life in this country seeking asylum. She graciously agreed to come to KHOI and tell her story, accompanied by David Hansen, who is chair of the Ames Sanctuary Interfaith Partners, otherwise known as ASIP. David Hansen graciously made the arrangements for this interview. I asked David to first explain what ASIP is. Here's David.
We have 12 congregations represented so far, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, and Buddhist representation, with the official support of St. Thomas.
St. Thomas Aquinas Church?
Yes, and also of AIRA, Ames Interfaith Refugee Alliance. We're a group that's all volunteers, and we are tax deductible. We have two programs especially that are active that I would share with you. First, I think we're the only ones in Iowa that have a program to support DACA immigrants, child arrivals with their parents or by themselves as children. The other program that we're here to visit with you today is to provide support for those who would like to sponsor the immigrants who are waiting for their decisions. Lisida Membreño is our first sponsored person to come in. We're here to provide support for those who would like to sponsor those immigrants who are being held in detention. But her case is different. She was never detained because rather than crossing the border and be detained, she had a humanitarian visa, and it just expedited everything along the way.
Lisida is here, so she's going to speak in a minute, but tell us, how did you find out about her?
ASIP has a relationship with the Sisters of St. Francis in Dubuque. And so one of the people there that I know said, David, we have someone that we've been working with that we think would really be in need of your help and a wonderful contribution to your community. So that's how we found out about Lisida. And the ASIP group voted to have this as our first person to help. So we were in touch with her from her outset in Honduras, crossed into Guatemala, then was holed up at the southern Mexican border in Tapachula for like 3 months, getting legal permission to proceed from the border to our border. She did everything legally at every step of the way in Mexico. She got at the border. They saw who her lawyer was, who was supporting her. So she's waiting her hearing, but without having been detained.
So she's appealing for asylum. When is her hearing?
It's not set yet.
Not set. And while she is waiting for that, she is
under the care?
Under the care of a sponsor.
Of her sponsor and the support sponsor groups.
You found housing.
That's the kind of role ASIP plays, mm-hmm. is to help the sponsors that would like to do it, but they need some help. And so the housing is with wonderful helpers, very patient and loving.
Okay, let's ask Lisida to tell us how she got from Honduras to Ames, Iowa.
Gracias por el espacio. Estoy contenta de poder compartir un poco la experiencia.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm pleased to be able to share my experiences with you.
Y seguramente pues ayudará un poco a crecer en las expectativas en futuras para, o sea, tantas realidades que muchas veces no se pueden ver detrás de una estadística. Hay una, toda una gran realidad.
Maybe it can help a little bit, sort of going more profoundly into the situation, because statistics tell a little bit, but there's so much deeper behind those.
Día con día, los migrantes son una realidad y es una crisis totalmente humanitaria. Cada caso siempre va a ser diferente y algo va a marcar siempre la diferencia en desde el punto de vista que lo veamos.
The situation with immigrants is very severe. The humanitarian need is so great. And each one has their different details of their cases.
La migración siempre tiene un punto de partida y la mayoría de las personas que tratamos de tomar una decisión de abandonar nuestro patrimonio, nuestro país, nuestra familia, todo por cambiar una historia. Siempre tiene un porqué. No, nadie emigra porque quiere.
There are so many different stories. No one immigrants really because they want to. There are so many situations that are difficult in leaving the country that we love, that we're accustomed to, our families, the city that we've grown up in her case, a beautiful city.
Can you ask her a little bit about her family?
Somos una familia numerosa de nuestros padres.
We're a large family.
Somos siete hermanos. Perdimos hace 3 años a mi hermana por un cáncer gástrico.
We were 7 children, but we lost one to cancer.
Gracias a Dios hemos sido una familia bastante próspera, muy bendecida. No ha faltado el pan de cada día. Mi padre ha sido siempre agricultor toda la vida.
She is a family that is not from extreme poverty like others. Her father is someone who works in agriculture, a farmer.
Has her family been in the area for many generations?
Todas las generaciones posibles. Somos nativos.
They're native, however many generations that is.
So her family has been there as long as anybody remembers.
Yeah.
And they've owned land for a long time?
Small landowners.
But when she says they're native, what does she mean?
Y pertenecemos a un grupo étnico propio.
Yeah, back there they do pertain to an ethnic group, yes, an indigenous group.
If you've just tuned in, I'm Ursula Rudenberg here on Local Talk, speaking with Licida Membreño, who is a recent immigrant from Honduras seeking asylum in the United States, and she is here with David Hansen, who is chair of the Ames Sanctuary Interfaith Partners, otherwise known as ASIP, who has helped facilitate her being able to come to Ames and find a home here. David is interpreting for Licida, and we really appreciate Licida sharing her story.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
How did you end up making the journey to Iowa?
Es una historia. Ha habido todo un esquema trabajado antiguamente. De hecho, desde que estoy en la escuela, siempre he llevado mi área de liderazgo comunal. Y mi participación ha sido mucho más con la comunidad en defensa de los derechos de las mujeres y de los niños. Más el ahora con el tema del cambio climático. Desde ahí, pues, ha empezado mi trayectoria de liderazgo con la iglesia desde mi comunidad.
So she says her activity in the community, she's been a leader, is especially looking at domestic abuse, but also very much with the climatic change in her community.
A community organizer.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's had very close relationships with the church. That's how we came to know her, because she's been treasurer of a group of churches around her community.
In Honduras.
Yes.
Y debido a ellas, pues, han sido como mis otras hermanas en la fe. Y después de llevar mi trayectoria como líder comunal, esto también me ha llevado a pasar situaciones desafiantes. Y una de ellas por las que me ha llevado ya ahora casi 8 años de haber abandonado mi pueblo natal, mi casa, debido a la persecución por mi nivel de pensamiento y mis ideologías sobre todo. De hecho, yo no tengo afines con un color político en mi país. Simplemente así he sido una mujer que decido por personas, no por colores, y creo mucho, pues, en la libertad de pensamiento.
She's a person who believes in the freedom of thought. She does not associate with any of the political parties in Honduras. Her relationship really is with the faith group. She was in touch with the Sisters of St. Francis in Dubuque because they have a partnership arrangement with her town and also with the Catholic Church in San Francisco.
Yo he aprendido de que uno tiene que aprender a llevar o a sobrevivir a través de una crisis. Por muchos años tenía que estar privada de mi libertad, no podía vivir cerca de mi familia. por cuestiones de seguridad, sobre todo porque desde mucho tiempo pues siempre he sido objeto de persecución y muy constantemente pues amenazas y no solo a mi persona sino a mi familia en general. Y mientras estoy cerca de mi familia se corre un riesgo de inseguridad, y entre más lejos pues debo de evitar riesgo para mi familia.
Her situation on her leaving Honduras is that for a considerable period of time she's been the object of persecution that endangered both her and her family. So she's had to live apart from the family so that they could be protected, but she's for a number of years suffered that situation.
Persecución, hay muchas maneras allá, por ejemplo, persecución de género, violencia de género, pero también en mi caso fue un poco más de carácter político.
There is lots of forms of persecution there, being a woman, also some political in it.
Was it related to the community work she was doing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Y todo eso, pues, ha sido muy difícil para mi familia sobre todo, y en mi caso como mamá y como hermana y como miembro de una comunidad, me ha llevado a ausentarme de mi labor como líder y dedicarme al servicio de las personas que más sufren el hecho de la enfermedad. Después de un buen tiempo, pues la decisión pues la he tenido que tomar de abandonar el país como tal.
It meant that she had to be away from the family. She had to leave the responsibility she had in the community.
So she was experiencing retaliation for the community organizing she was doing.
Sí.
That's correct.
Yeah, y en todo eso, pues, no solo una persona, había muchos involucrados. Pero ya cuando se hace un proceso judicial, pues, se hace una investigación más extensa. Verificar, pues, las razones y hasta qué motivo, hasta qué punto se puede actuar con justicia. Realmente, pues, hemos luchado contra eso. Se ha hecho mucha justicia alrededor, pero al aplicar la justicia, siempre uno corre mucho más peligro, porque yo no tenía un abogado que me defendiera, simplemente con mis hechos reales y pruebas de ADN y todas los comprobantes que tenía de los hechos sucedidos en ese momento.
There were various kinds of aggression against her, and so things ended up in the court at one instance. She didn't have a lawyer, had to defend herself. Her testimony ended up in the leader or one person being sent to prison because of her key witnessing.
The leader of the persecution.
Exactly.
Las amenazas y todo siempre surgieron desde la prisión.
He was able to stir up things from prison, so things were still not comfortable. When he was released from prison a bit early, he found her and said, "I am going to murder you and your family." And so that night she had to talk it over with her father. And he said, "You must leave this country for the sake of your life and your son and for the sake of the family." And so the next day she packed up what she could and left Honduras.
And where did she go?
Her first step was the border at Guatemala.
Pasé a la estación migratoria de Honduras y Guatemala para presentar mis documentos míos y de mi hijo y las pruebas de COVID que eran son necesarias en este tiempo de pandemia, y ellos me dieron un permiso de entrada y permanencia en Guatemala por 90 días.
She had all her documents with her to present at the border. She got permission from Guatemala to be in the country for 90 days.
You know, in her community, she was clearly from an established family, a community leader. How was that to suddenly have to go to a whole new country alone with her son? How did she feel?
Tener a mi hijo era muy importante. Tenía menos preocupación porque él estaba conmigo. Sabía de los desafíos que íbamos a pasar durante el camino y no sabíamos la respuesta que iba a tener migración en relación a nuestras entradas y salidas.
She went with her son, and is very glad that her son could be with her, but it also created a lot of difficulties in the tremendous uncertainty about immigration happening. Yeah, we were following her. We had support all along the way. After Guatemala, she was at the Mexican border for 3 months. In Tapachula, she needed help to get humanitarian visa permission to travel up to the United States. ACIP works with a group called Amnesty Seeking Sponsor Project. It's a national organization that's tremendously helped her. They had even legal contacts in Tapachula, Mexico that helped her. They helped her get across the border to the United States. So she went right across the border after waiting for 8 days to get the appointment and didn't have to go to camp or anything else. As soon as she got across the border, the state of California picked up all her expenses, her transportation, her hotel expenses and meals while she had to get the more in-depth virus tests, and then handled her and her son's tickets to Ames, which is where we connected with her. She's only been here about, I think, less than 2 weeks. But
final question. How she feels being here in Ames?
Ahora me siento, desde que entré a los Estados Unidos, la historia ha cambiado tantísimo.
Ever since she's been in the United States, the story has completely changed.
Yeah.
For the good.
Me siento mejor y me siento segura y con una comunidad grande y el ambiente donde me gusta.
It feels safe, a large community that is really welcoming and helpful.
What does she have to say to the Americans as the newest American?
Primero, estoy muy agradecida por el acogimiento.
I'm very thankful for the way I've been received.
Y sobre todo, pues, no hay nada mejor que acoger a un extranjero con un corazón y un alma generosa.
And there's nothing better than receiving someone with a large heart and generosity.
Y no todas las personas que abandonamos un país no somos personas, no todas tenemos maldad en nuestro corazón, sino tantas ganas de salir adelante, de compartir nuestra cultura, nuestras creencias y ser un equipo grande para construir una sociedad diferente.
And we don't come with any malintents, bad intentions. We come with the necessity of having to find safety.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Many is a time I've been mistaken, and many times confused. Yes, and I've often felt forsaken, and certainly misused. Oh, but I'm alright, I'm alright, I'm just weary too. I don't know what's so much not been bad.
My name is Maddie Tate Smith, Public Affairs Coordinator for the Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault. We provide resources and support to rape crisis centers, shelter programs, and then they work directly with survivors in all 99 counties across the state.
And I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour on Local Talk. The conversation that Maddie and I are going to have includes the topic of sexual abuse, should you prefer to turn away for your own personal reasons. Maddie contacted KHOI last Wednesday after Pennsylvania's highest court overturned the sexual assault conviction of actor and comedian Bill Cosby and released him from prison. Cosby was sentenced in 2018 to 3 to 10 years in a state prison for drugging and sexually assaulting one woman, with 59 other women also accusing him of sexual assault. Maddie contacted KHOI with a sense that it's an important moment to address consequences.
Yeah, we were shocked and frankly angry. This sends absolutely the wrong message to the courageous sexual assault survivors who came forward during the Cosby trial, but also just survivors in general. Today's decision really reflects the challenges that survivors of sexual assault face when they share their experiences through the criminal legal system. Just today, speaking of breaking news, the Boy Scouts of America announced an $850 million settlement with tens of thousands of survivors who brought a case against them. Looking at that, there's some accountability there that we don't see very often, but think about how long it took for that to occur. There have been allegations dating back as far as the 1960s, if not even sooner than that. And for it to have taken this long for survivors to get even some sort of monetary compensation, that seems terribly unfair when we think about the effects that sexual trauma has on victims of abuse. When people like Cosby are able to walk free, it really sends the message that sexual assault and its impact on victims isn't taken seriously. And so we just really want to remind survivors that the criminal legal system isn't the only way to find healing. Victim advocacy programs can help and support there to help heal.
You were saying that the effect of this event is not only to discourage people from trying to prosecute crimes, that it actually triggers memories of being sexually assaulted.
The ripple effect of something like this is that it's very triggering for survivors. So people hear this and then it might trigger a memory or an experience that they had with someone who caused harm. And that's what our victim service programs and our call helpline are for in that time of crisis.
The word triggering, it's a word that you hear a lot. What does that really mean?
Something that causes a person to relive some sort of trauma that they've experienced. Things in the news can trigger memories or post-traumatic stress with survivors.
Have you heard any responses to the Cosby release?
We do, yeah. Here in Iowa, our call helpline and a lot of our programs are receiving more calls right now.
So they see an increase in crisis calls?
Exactly. Frequently, we don't think about how the news cycle tends to re-traumatize survivors because it can be really hard. For anyone who's listening to this, feeling they need to reach out, you are not alone. Help is available. The Iowa Victim Service Call Center is available 24/7 to provide free and confidential support. And they can be reached at 1-800-770-1650, or you can text Iowa Help to 20121. You can also visit our website at iowacasa.org for support and find victim advocacy program in your local area as well.
iowacasa.org?
Exactly, yep. The phone number for the helpline is 1-800-770-1650 or text Iowa Help 20121.
Okay. Do you think that Cosby's case is important because he's such a household name?
Bill Cosby's conviction was the first high-profile conviction after the Me Too movement sort of exploded. And so he was the first high-profile perpetrator to really be held accountable through the criminal legal system. And to have that decision overturned, a lot of survivors across the country and here in Iowa who are sitting at home watching the news, listening to this news unfold, I mean, the message that this is sending really has a negative impact on whether or not survivors feel that they can come forward and that their case will be taken seriously by the criminal legal system. We see a lot of survivors who are fearful to come forward to talk about even what happened to them with victim advocates, much less pursue something through the criminal legal system because they are afraid having relived that trauma. And then to not have the person who caused harm be held accountable in some way, it just doesn't feel right. What we do and what we say around issues of sexual violence really matters. People are really looking at this as, okay, so what does this mean for the movement against sexual violence?
I'm Ursula Rudenberg. This is Local Talk, and we are hearing from Maddie Tate Smith, Public Affairs Coordinator for the Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault, a statewide coalition to fight sexual assault. Maddie spoke with me last Wednesday when the news got out that Bill Cosby was released from a prison term he was serving after a sexual assault conviction. Do you think Cosby's case was about celebrity?
Bill Cosby has a lot of money, he has a lot of power, and he carries a lot of clout. I think any time when dealing with powerful people, they have the means to keep pushing for appeals, whatever that they need to do. Being a celebrity allows you access to a lot of power and money that can be used to your advantage when you're a person who causes harm. And that goes back to the nature of sexual violence, right? The power and control dynamic and what that looks like.
It's interesting what you just said. You said that the dynamic of having that much power and money is similar to the dynamics within sexual assault. Did you really say that?
Yeah.
Can you say something about that?
When we look at the dynamics of sexual violence, assault, and abuse, there's a power and control dynamic where the person who causes harm creates a dynamic with the person that they're harming where they carry some sort of power over that person. So when we look at the tactics used with Bill Cosby, because of his celebrity, he was called America's dad for years. He can use that to his advantage. Look, I'm Bill Cosby. I have all this at my disposal. And there's that inherent power dynamic there that we see frequently with all kinds of cases of sexual violence. And it doesn't always necessarily have to be a person with money. There can be a similar dynamic at a McDonald's. If you have a shift supervisor who's sexually harassing you and this person's like, look, I'm the shift supervisor. I have more power.
The common factor is power.
Exactly.
It's a teachable moment, right?
Exactly. And then grooming tactics go into it also, creating a power imbalance so that if and when that person chooses to come forward, that the dynamic is such that that person won't have as much control of the situation. So it's about power and control, either real or perceived power. If a victim perceives another person as having power over them, that's just as significant as someone like Bill Cosby, who has a lot of notoriety and a lot of money.
What's the consequence to feeling that powerlessness?
Post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, anxiety. I've heard from survivors where it's difficult for them to even go grocery shopping without experiencing some sort of distress. It's lifelong. There was a CDC report that came out in 2017 that looked at the cost of sexual violence, and they estimated that the lifetime cost of rape in the United States is approximately $122,000 per victim. What they look at with that is not just the mental health costs, not just the medical costs, but also if a person loses their job or is unable to go to work, the cost on the economy, all those things. That's pretty staggering. I don't know about you. I do not have $122,000 just lying around in my bank account, right? we can believe survivors and support survivors, giving them that validation so that survivors aren't dismissed.
I've been speaking with Maddie Tate Smith, Public Affairs Coordinator for Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Thank you for reaching out, Maddie.
Thank you, Ursula.
The website is iowacasa.org.
Yeah. The phone number for the helpline is 1-800-770-1650 or text Iowa Help 20121.
We'll put those on our website as well at khoifm.org. And you have been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for spending time with me. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And remember that you, the listener, really, 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 really are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. And we'll see you again on the radio.